You're listening to Deep North, the official podcast of Iceland Review, Iceland's longest-running English-language magazine. I'm Andy Sophia Fontaine, and I'm here with artist Jóanna Pavlovská to talk about their work as an artist and curator. So thank you for joining me today, Jóanna.
Hi. Happy to be here. Mm-hmm.
So we last spoke during the interview that that you took in our magazine. The interview being, the article, by the way, is called To Thrive in Chaos. It's available for subscribers. And at the time that we spoke, you were going through applications for the Hamraborg Festival, which you curate. Can you briefly explain for our listeners what the Hamraborg Festival is?
Yeah, so Hamraborg Festival is a multidisciplinary art festival held annually in Kópavogur. In Hamraborg, the heart of Kópavogur. And it's the fourth time this year. It will happen at the end of August. And it grew out of artist run space called Midpunkt that was started in 2018. I joined Snæbjörn and Ragnheiður in 2020. And shortly after, we decided to start with the festival. So now Midpunkt, as a physical space, is no longer in Hamraborg, but the festival is. And it's a very unique, very fun art festival. All events are free of charge. And main focus is on visual art, performance art, site-specific works, but we also have many workshops, concerts, and experimental projects. And artists are invited to come to Hamraborg and exhibit their artworks in public spaces.
Yeah, tell us about that, because that's one of the things that I thought was really interesting when we last spoke about this, is that, like, normally when you think of an art festival, or at least when I think of an art festival, I think of, like, one building, like, a very large space. Hamraborg Festival is a bit different, though.
Yeah, definitely. So we decided to not only have art exhibitions and events in culture houses of Hamraborg, such as Kertversap, library, and so on, but also to work closely with the people who live in Hamraborg, with people who work there, and explore architecture of Hamraborg, try to look at public spaces as exhibition spaces. And so then the exhibitions are happening like in Catalina.
The Bar Catalina.
Yeah, yes. The famous one. In the Euromarket, the Polish store, in the office spaces, Visitor, Miotl, Bakery. And so it's very exciting because then we have this merge of not only people who come to the art festival who are interested in art, but also we create space for people, audiences that come to those places, like bakeries, shops, and then they are exposed to art. So it creates a very interesting dynamic, and it makes the festival a very unique initiative, as we believe. So we have many projects that work with the local context, with the history of Hamraborg and the architecture. We have artists who engage with the local community, but then also we have projects that are very speculative, and so yeah, all kinds of projects, not only with the local context of Hamraborg, and its history and the possible futures, but also artists from abroad. And so it also creates this very interesting dynamic.
It sounds like it.
Yeah.
I really like this idea of people like going to the bakery and encountering a work of art and in a very unexpected place and wanting to know more about it. So on that note, can you give us any updates since we last spoke in terms of the application process? Have you nailed down who's going to be there?
Mm-hmm. So every year we announce an open call and we invite all kinds of projects to be a part of the festival. This year we received 200 applications, which is quite a lot.
Yes.
Which is wonderful. And it was really difficult to make certain decisions. But here we are. And now currently we are in touch with artists. And we started planning the program. And the festival will be for a week at the end of August, beginning of September, with most performances and events happening between Thursday to Sunday. And the exhibitions will be open for a week.
Yes, that week being the last week, going from August into September, was it?
Yeah, exactly. And the program will be really exciting. We will have a fashion show, we will have a choir, we will have very exciting visual art projects. We will also have many, many workshops, and those will happen mostly on Sunday. Also family-friendly events, because we would love to reach out to people with families. And we will also have a wild concert night at Catalina on Saturday.
It's a great place for it.
Yeah, definitely.
When will this program be available online for people to check out? Do you think sometime this summer?
Yeah, okay. I think so. Sometime this summer. Yeah.
That's great. I'll be sure to make sure that our readers and our listeners know the moment that this program is available for public viewing.
Yeah. Also, I would like to add that we also wanted to make a festival that will not only reach to diverse audience, but will also bring diverse perspective. And we'll create this kind of a dialogue between different voices. And what was also important for us was to create a space, a platform outside 101 Reykjavik. So that's also why Hamraborg, with its unique spirit and the history and opportunities. And we were very... We are very happy and grateful that we were able to organize the festival the way we've been doing that so far, thanks to immense support from Copa Voxpire. So we are able to pay artists.
Yes.
Which is also really important for us.
Yeah.
And
extremely so. Now, when you mentioned diversity, what sort of diversity do you mean?
I not only mean the diverse mediums and art projects that speak from different corners of art scene, but also for me personally, it was important to create a program that will be intersected, in a sense that I really wanted to reach out to minority groups, and also offer a festival that will welcome not only artists from the different backgrounds, but also reach out to minorities, people from different minority groups, and invite them to come to the festival and enjoy art. So that was my idea from the start.
That's one of this is one of many things that I liked about the concept of the Hamraborg Festival. The fact that it's outside of downtown, it involves types of art that are a bit outside of the mainstream, and also attracting both artists and audience and art enjoyers, for lack of a better term, who are also minority or marginalized in some way. And I think that's what especially appealed to me about the Hamraborg Festival, and I'm sure it will for anybody else who attends. On a biographical note, we did two interviews, in fact, for this article. And of the many things that you had said about your upbringing, one thing that really stood out in my mind is saying that you tell people that you're born in Poland, live in Iceland, but you were raised on the internet.
That's correct, yes.
Yes, I really, really like this a lot. So on that note, can you tell us a little bit about who Joanna is? Where did you come?
Which one?
Yeah, that is true. You do have many.
I have so many avatars. I stopped counting, to be honest.
And I suppose we all do, really.
Right.
Different people know different versions of us.
Yeah.
But in terms of just where you're from and when you moved here and how you became interested in art in particular, mm-hmm. I found really fascinating. What inspired you to get into art in particular? I really liked that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love internet. Mm-hmm. And I've been always an active user. And then my interest in art was sparked from the fact that I'm queer and non-binary. And I was growing up in Poland. And internet offered me a space to experiment, explore not only my self-doms, but I was able to find online communities, which, as you know, is really important.
Yes.
When you are a queer person
somewhere
out there. So those two things came together, and this intersection is still very, in many ways, ambiguous for me, which is exciting. Then in 2016, me and my best friend, Sasa Lubinska, we started Brokat Films. It's an art duo, and we mostly work with new media, internet, aesthetics. And I bring the queerness, hence she brings the weirdness. So
that's fantastic.
It's a bundle of joy. And when I say new media, I don't really mean high tech, high resolution images and software. I mean poor images.
Can you elaborate on what my poor images? Because this is something that actually came up during the proofreading process for the article, where I had to explain, glitchiness and JPEG artifacts and things like this.
Yeah, it's actually a category from the art theory field, started by Hito Steyerl, who is Berlin-based artist and art theorist. And really inspiring for me. And this category of poor images reflect on what we experience online with all these images circulating were just remixed and reduced and decompressed with memes in poor quality.
Yes.
And yeah, images in poor quality. And for me, it's very connected with certain internet narratives and aesthetics also.
Certainly. I think a lot of younger people especially would be familiar with that. Like, for example, there is like deep fried images or deep fried memes, for
exactly,
example,
yeah,
where someone like deliberately degrades mm-hmm. The quality of an image to make it look like it's been downloaded and re-uploaded like hundreds of times.
Yeah.
To actually like go for that aesthetic. For me, it reminds me a lot of when I was younger, when you would first start seeing jeans being sold in the store that were already ripped.
Yeah.
Like that was an appealing aesthetic. So yeah. It's really not that, I don't know. I think it's a pretty universal thing that like aesthetically, there's something aesthetically pleasing to some people anyways, about something that looks old and used and worn and poor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And also what is interesting for me with the poor images is that they feed both into capitalistic dynamics mm-hmm. and capitalistic structures of the internet, but also at the same time into alternative audiovisual economies.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something really interesting also.
I think so too.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely think so. I really like, speaking for myself, like I've always been attracted to art that serves capitalism being separated, being divorced from capitalism mm-hmm. and just put in its context of art by itself. Like the most obvious examples, I suppose, would be Warhol's Campbell's soup cans and the Brillo boxes and what have you. And I mean, a lot of that was due to the fact that he also had a background in advertising and recognized this work as art.
Yeah. Since you mentioned Warhol, yeah, he also said that in the future, everyone will be famous for
15 minutes.
15
yeah.
minutes. And I think it happened with the internet.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that we are beyond that, in a sense that now the desire is to actually not be famous, not be visible for at least 15, at least 5 minutes, because when you think about internet, social media, it's a surveillance.
Yeah.
So actually now the desire I think is quite opposite.
Wow, I got chills. That is very well. That is very well said. That is very well said. Yeah, I think Warhol would have loved the internet.
Definitely. What do you think would be his like email address?
I think when it comes to email, he would probably have an assistant take care of that. He'd have like 5 or 6 assistants taking care of his emails, but he would be constantly online. Like I think he would be an incredible poster.
Shit poster.
Yes.
Definitely, I can see that.
Twitter, probably, well, maybe not so much today,
mm-mm.
but former Twitter, as we knew it.
Dead name.
Yes. Twitter's dead name. He would have enjoyed that. He probably would have loved image boards a lot as well.
I cannot see Andy Warhol on Pinterest. I think
no.
That's not the vibe. Maybe MySpace.
Instagram, do you think?
Probably meme admin
yeah.
of some Instagram account.
Yes,
you know?
I think so too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But enough about Warhol.
Andy at hotmail.com.
Yes. At CompuServe.
Send your nudes and images of the soup.
To Andy Warhol at AOL.com. But to more contemporary art, tell us about your most is some of your work. Like, in particular, if you'd like, your most recent exhibition, Horseplay. Just to provide a little context to listeners, this was the second work of Ioannis that that attracted me to looking more into their work. It was originally showed at Gala Tikhanovskaya, and you know what? I'm not going to do it any justice. I'm just going to let them explain it. Like, can you tell us about the exhibition?
Of course.
Yes.
So the exhibition title was Horseplay.
Yes.
And exhibition was a merge of virtual reality experiences and the physical world. We wanted to create an experience of embracing this space in between the virtual spheres and the physical world. And we work a lot with film, video, 3D, performance art, and then we like to really play around and experiment with all kinds of new media technologies. 3 years ago, we made a visual novel game as a part of a group show at the Kligov Bank. And for this exhibition, we decided to work with the concept of internet avatars and try to embrace glitch as a category, not only an aesthetic category, but also a way to embrace our bodies. Because what we often do is we use our bodies as a medium in our art projects. And from the start, really, since 2016, now when I think about it. And then we created this horse avatar that serves as a metaphor to talk about our longings, desires, and connections that happen in the internet realms.
And this is demonstrated, just to clarify for listeners, this was an installation piece. And upon this, like, what I noticed first when I first entered the space was the smell of hay, fresh hay, to clarify, not used hay. And within the space, there's so these two monitors showing these videos that they're describing with some really incredible music. And so go into that about the horse representing desire and freedom.
So yeah, we, as you mentioned, there were like two screens laying in the hay. There was also an installation consisting Ethernet cables, light cables, wires, and a piece of clothing that was made by our friend who is an artist and fashion designer known as Body Holes. Because from the start, I knew that I would like to make an exhibition that will be very collaborative. So I invited to the project all kinds of queer non-binary artists, because I was really interested in this aspect of a dialogue and kind of exchanging ideas about the internet and self-doms and queer desires that internet makes often like possible to thrive and discover. And then there was also a third video that was in the space, in the separate space of the gallery. And yeah, a lot of hay. Oh gosh. Wow. So we were very lucky because we were able to start working with the hay very early in the space of Galerie Kanski. So I still can smell hay in my bedroom. Like, it's intense. But yeah, we wanted, we intentionally brought this aspect of organic, kind of physical, very present, intense material as a kind of a way to mix it with internet cable as a materialization, kind of analog materialization of internet connections. And yeah, we were interested in thinking about that. And then I think I was also interested in like bringing those two strong binaries together to dismantle this whole concept, basically. And to
of the whole concept of the binary,
like the strong like virtual aspect with the strong physical aspect, and make them clash in a sense, and see what will happen next. So yeah, and then I use a metaphor of the horse avatar as a way to speak about my own personal experiences with queer desire. I also invited different queer artists to the project to ask them about what does it mean to embody glitch and embody horse. And that was that.
Well, the result was really stunning. Yeah. I have to say, like, it's still something that it's an exhibition that, like, for me, successful art stays with me. And I find myself, like, thinking back to, like, what I'd seen and heard and experienced, like, repeatedly through time. And that's, yeah, definitely what horseplay accomplished as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, not everything needs to be, like, laid out and explained and spelled out, like, in terms of what stuff means or whatever. Whoops.
Yeah.
Like, not everything needs to be laid out and explained in terms of, like, what it means, because it's always going to be resonating in different ways with different people. Like you had said in your interview, like, that you enjoy hearing how people interpret the horse avatar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have no interest in horses,
per se.
Right. I'm interested in this visual representation and memes and avatars, really. And what does it make me do? How does it make me feel when I look at it? So that was the starting point, also, and it was really, really playful as well. Mm-hmm. That's a very important aspect, always has been, that we often, with my collaborator Sasa, we just often work through play. And one of the videos in the exhibition titled "Lol Horse."
Mm-hmm.
Not only reflects on internet subcultures and internet phenomena such as lol cow,
yes,
etc. But it's more about also our experience with reinventing yourself online. And putting yourself out there And we started working on this video months ago. Sasa is also a pole dancer.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. And we were working on the choreography. And then we shot a performance video of Sasa pole dancing as a horse, with me giving her instructions and being the one who is trying to discipline the horse.
Yes.
And then I completely destroyed this video. I decided to make it a part of the video work and turn Sasa's body into a poor image,
mm-hmm.
basically. Glitchy, poor image, as a way to kind of explore body limitations also, and kind of societal expectations when it comes to our bodies. And then I work with AI, found footage, some original artworks, 3D models. So yeah, there was a lot of stuff happening in the video. Yeah.
Okay. That's really intriguing stuff. Really intriguing stuff. I loved horseplay. It's a fantastic expedition. So finally, if we can just wait for the traffic to quell down. Because you see, we're right next to Cybrite and there's a lot of trucks that drive by. It's really annoying. Finally, what is next for you?
More horses, more avatars, more interplays. I would love to expand this project. Luckily, I got Lista Monaloin, so it is an amazing opportunity for me because I can focus not only on the festival, but also more on my art practice.
Mm-hmm. And for the unfamiliar, Lista Monaloin is a grant that's given by the Icelandic government to artists so they can continue doing their work.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And not have to rely on corporate sponsorship.
or work three jobs.
Right.
To pay rent.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I would love to see the project expanding. And I would like to make a internet digital sculpture online. And we're gonna continue working on our 3D animation because I feel like it's something that is exciting maybe to work on a little bit more. And I have an idea for another film video work that I would like to make. And my research now is on aspects of masculinity and how it manifests, how it is manifested online. And so maybe I will ride this horse a little bit more and see.
That is a very rich subject.
Where will it take me, that wild, wild ride?
Well, I certainly look forward to it. Joanna Pawlowska, thank you very much for joining me today for this conversation. And this has been Deep North, Iceland Review's official podcast. Thank you very much for listening. I'm Andy Sophia Fontaine. Be good to each other.
Thanks.